about this class handout and supply a few more details. If you don't have a copy, can I? I have some extra copies if you need one. Okay. But before that, first of all, I understand that there is a contradiction between this class and Joel Kamnitzer's. Is there anybody here affected by the contradiction other than Karine? I know Karine. Okay. So, Karine, I'm afraid at the moment, unless there are more people in Joel's class affected by this, then I'm afraid nothing will happen. Okay, now, as for, good, what did I do with today's notes? Oh, here. Okay, also, just to correct a few, just to correct a minor mistake from last time and to complete a minor thing from last time, you know, we defined the Kaufman bracket by this goes to A times this plus B times that, and that was fine. But what I got wrong is I named them incorrectly. So I think I called this one the zero smoothing and this one the one smoothing. And the common names, I don't know why, there's no importance to it, it's a convention. The common name is that this is the one smoothing, and this is the zero smoothing. And my way of remembering it is to think, and I said it last time, and I kind of, clearly I was confused, if you noticed how I said it, I was looking and it didn't make sense, and the reason was that I got the convention wrong. Okay, so you know, you think of this as a highway interchange in this, in which this is level zero and this is level one. Okay, and the K smoothing is when you enter the interchange at level K and turn right, like we do in North America, okay? So again, the K smoothing is you enter the interchange at level K and turn right. So if you interchange, so the zero smoothing is you enter at zero, you turn right, you end up making this curve if you enter from here, and the other curve if you enter from here, and vice versa for level one. Do you have a copy of the handout?
No.
So now you do. Okay. Beyond that, everything that I said was right, except I should make a further sort of addition to it. So, okay, first of all, the next relation was that if you have a cycle and a diagram, it's equal to D times the diagram, the bracket of the diagram. I wrote it last time as K cycles give you D to the power K. That's equivalent if you base the induction. So the empty set goes to 1. So the empty diagram goes to 1. Okay? We also figure out that this almost gives an invariant if A, if B is equal to 1 over A and D equals minus A squared minus 1 over A squared. And in this case, the only failure is with the Rademeister 1 move. Okay, so it is invariant under, invariant under Rademeister 2, which says that you can undo this kind of pictures. It's invariant under Rademeister 3, which says that you can slide strands underneath a crossing, so you will get this. By the way, I stated Rademeister 3 as you can slide a strand underneath a crossing, but you can look at the exact same picture and view it in two other ways. You can view it as the upper strand is sliding above this crossing, so it's equally well sliding a strand above a crossing, but you can also view it as the middle strand slides inside that crossing, right? All three views are the same, okay? But it is not invariant under R1, which is this move. Okay? However, we found an alternative invariant, or we found a second invariant, much easier, just counting the signs of the crossings. And that was the right. And we found that the right has the exact same behavior. It's invariant under these two, but not under this one. So therefore, a certain combination of the right and the bracket gave us an invariant. And that combination was what I called last time the Jones polynomial. And it was negative a cubed to the power of the right of L times the bracket of L. And then I left it at that last time. And I want to fix it a little bit. And the fix is, normally it is divided by the invariant of the unknot, so that the invariant of the unknot itself will be 1. What is the invariant of the unknot? Sorry, the bracket of the unknot. D. Right, because there are no crossings to smooth, and there is only one cycle, so the value is D. So I could equally well write, you know, save 2 keystrokes and write D instead. Okay? But, well, I don't know why I wrote it this way. That's one correction that's normally made, and it's only a normalization issue. It has no importance whatsoever. And then the other correction that's often done is that so you look at this for the first few knots, and you find that for knots, you always get a to the power 4. Everything is a function of a to the 4th. Okay? And then you'll think a bit harder and you can prove it. Okay? But this is not where I want to go, so I'm not showing you how to prove it. Okay? But then the common substitution is to replace a by q to the 1 over 4. So that a to the 4th becomes q. And now you get a polynomial, or rather a Laurent polynomial, in a variable q. And that's how you see it in the tables. It's not particularly, when things tabulate, when people tabulate these things, that's how they tabulate it. Did I ask you about the 2 homework assignments? So I asked, how hard is it to compute the coloring invariant of the knot? And I asked you, how many different values does the Jones polynomial get on the first 250 knots? Anybody knows the answer?
Can we give us 1 more time, 1 more day?
Okay. Should I do the second problem? I can do the second problem. I don't know the answer, but I can do it in front of you in 20 seconds. Okay? So, you know, I think I will do it, even though it has no importance whatsoever. It's just nice to know that tools exist. So, let's start Mathematica. Make it full screen so that you all see it. Increase the font size. Load the package not.to.re. You would have to first install it, but on my computer it's already installed. And now let's do compute Jones for all knots between 0 and 10 crossings. I hope this will work. Well, here are all the values. Okay? Let's do union of this set. Union of the set will just eliminate repetitions. Okay? Here is the result, and let's check the length of this. The length of this is 243. Now let's do all knots with length with between 0 and, what did I say, 10 crossings, and just compute the length of that, 250. So we almost made it. Okay, we can almost separate all knots. Later we will have a few more invariants, but you know, that's pretty good. Okay? Now, are you with me? Are you okay? Okay. Now, I owe you another thing, which is an explanation why I will never prove the Rademeister the Rademeister theorem in this class. Okay? So, right, I told you, for me, these are more or less the axioms defining a knot. Okay? But it's not really the axioms. There is a theorem saying that a knot, the way you think about it in R3, is equivalent to a picture, to a picture modulus these relations. Okay? Now, so why am I, why do I not like this? It's a good theorem, but why don't I like proving it? So first of all, the definition of a knot, the formal definition of a knot in R3 is not obvious. Okay? The naive definition will be it is an embedding, meaning a continuous map, continuous one-to-one map of a circle into R3. Here is one. Okay? Modulo homotopies of such. So modulo, can I use this language? So modulo homotopies of such where you remain one-to-one throughout the homotopy. Okay? This definition is wrong. Okay? And the reason it is wrong, well, it's wrong in more than one way. So the first way it is wrong is if you look at this tiny picture here, so long, long line with a tiny trefoil on it, sort of the separator between the different sections of this handout, of this web page. So this separator is explains what's wrong with this definition. Meaning, if you have a tiny, tiny, tiny knot on a long string in R3, well, the way I made it, it was supposed to be a circle. So think that it closes behind my back or something, okay? Anyway, I can pull it tighter. Well, in real life, I cannot go beyond a certain tightness. But in the world of continuous functions, I could just pull it indefinitely tighter until it is of, you know, until this chunk is of size 0, and then it's gone. Okay? So we've just proven that every knot, well, or at least the trefoil knot, but sort of every reasonable knot in R3 is trivial. Okay? Because you can do some, well, basically because continuous functions are not sufficient to describe knots. Speaking of the fact that continuous functions are not sufficient to describe knots, here are a few other sort of pathologies that happen with smooth function, with continuous functions, which I don't really want to say anything about. They have nothing to do with my class, but it's just worth mentioning. So here is an embedding of an interval in R3. This is a continuous map of an interval to R3. It's a single interval, because, you know, towards the end there is mess, but the mess becomes smaller and smaller and smaller, so it's still a single interval, and it's still a continuous map. Nevertheless, the complement is not simply connected. So if you have a tiny loop in the complement, there is no way of releasing it. Okay? So continuous functions have pathologies. Okay? And there are, you know, this is really not important, but there are other examples of such pathologies. Oops, sorry. So, you know, here is an embedding of a Cantor set in R3 whose complement is not simply connected, far from simply connected. And finally, again, well, you know what, these are aside, so let me not say it. But basically the bottom line is continuous is bad. Continuous or not bad, but it's not good enough to describe knots. Okay? So then you have to talk about smooth. And in fact, the definition does work well if you just replace the word continuous by smooth everywhere. Okay? So a knot would be a smooth map of a circle into R3, modulo smooth deformations, sorry, a smooth one-to-one map, modulo smooth deformations that keep it one-to-one. Okay? And then, in order to prove anything, okay, and then how does the proof of the Rademeister theorem goes? It goes like that. Well, if you have a smooth map into R3, you can find what's called a tubular neighborhood in which it looks like a tube. I have to define what, in which you can extend the map to look like a tube. I have to define what it is, but you can, but it can be defined. So there is some epsilon so that within an epsilon neighborhood, you have a what looks like a tube. And then you start deforming, and so long as you are, sorry, and then you can replace, once you have this tube, you can replace your knot by a polygonal knot, okay, made out of many, many pieces. And since you know that within the tube everything is well behaved, you know that the polygonal knot is, first of all, equivalent to the original knot, and secondly, is a knot, does not intersect itself, okay? And then you start deforming the picture, and you have to think about how the tubes deform, and then you have to think about how the transition into polygonal stuff deform, and you can show that that if you have one polygonal knot and another polygonal knot, you can always get from one to the other by a sequence of moves in which you replace two edges by one edge, so you join two edges, or the opposite, or you break two edges. So basically, by moves of the form, you replace a thing like this by a thing like that, provided the whole, no color chalk, provided the whole triangle that that is made by those three line segments is empty. Okay? So now we have a theorem about polygonal, or now we have a statement about polygonal knots. We want to show that two polygonal knots, well, sorry, we have shown that two smooth knots are, or we've shown that the, I tell you how to go from smooth knots to polygonal knots, and then you can show that two polygonal knots are equivalent if they're equivalent under these moves. And then you just have to show that if you have these moves in R3, then in a projection they become these moves. Okay? And the point is that you're not, more pieces of your knot can go behind this triangle or above this triangle, and then instead of moving the triangle all at once, you sort of move it in small steps, so that within each step there is at most one interesting thing that happens underneath or above, and then you show that the things that may happen are the Rademeister 2, Rademeister 3, and Rademeister 1 moves. And that's the end of the proof. So I gave you a sketch of the proof. Now, why don't I want to give the details? Because, first of all, it requires a larger, rather large amount of local differential geometry of curves in R3. You know, you have to prove the tubular neighborhood theorem, which has to do with the inverse function theorem, which you have to do a lot of analysis that has nothing to do with with the kind of knot theory that I want to talk about, which is much more algebraic. And after that, you have to do a lot of combinatorics of polygonal stuff in Rn, which is the same, meaning not related to what I really want to talk about. Okay? So I gave you a sketch, and I told you why I don't want to give the details. Are you with me? Are you okay? I hope you forgive me. Okay. Now let's talk about this, about the way the class will be run. So far I was talking content, and now I want to talk about this handout. Maybe I'll start with the technicalities. So I think you pretty much I'll keep the interesting parts for later. So I'll start with the real technicalities. Okay. So my name, you probably already know my address, my office hours, all that you can read. The classes, since you're here, you know the URL is this, and it shows what you're seeing now, more or less. The abstracts I will skip because I will want to say them in more detail later, but I do want to say something. So this class is not for everyone. Well, clearly not everyone is here. So the rule is being satisfied. But big parts of this class are about current research, and it's supposed to be a bad idea to give classes about current research. So I will do my best to soften it and include old stuff like this occasionally, or mostly. But, you know, it's... You can think of it as something exciting because I still don't fully understand the picture that I want to draw to you. But it's also a warning, okay? It's not as polished as a class, a core class in topology would be, okay? The prerequisites are the graduate core class in topology or algebra or anything equivalent, okay? So, and it's really just the maturity that you gain by taking this class more than the content of these classes. Okay? So those of you that I know here have the prerequisites easily. I can't speak for the others. Okay. I'm going to videotape, or we are videotaping, the whole class. And everything will be on the web. And furthermore, there is a class wiki, which is linked to these videos. And let me show you how it works. Okay? So if I go back to the top here and go to, say, the video of 090910, number 2, so this is the second hour of... 2009, September 10, and let's click on it while I made it open on a different window, you get a video page, and, you know, let's skip to somewhere inside the lecture. Here is the lecture. You can make it bigger if you want, okay? And then sometimes you will have to wait until the higher resolution version will load. Sometimes it just depends how far you go. Okay? Now, such video pages, you know, maybe we should go dark for this purpose. When you watch this video, underneath it, there is the same kind of linking material that links you to any other part of the class. So, like, if you click on the About handout, it will get you back to the About. If you click, let's go back, if you click here, it will take you to the first hour video, okay? And furthermore, you can add notes in two ways, okay? So you can edit a global note for this page, for this video page. So if I click edit here, it will open a place to edit a global note, let's click edit here and add, this is a note, and now let's save it and go back to this page and reload it, and it did two things. First of all, it added this is a note here, and secondly, in the class description here, or in the navigator for the class, it added this is a note. So the point is to add a global comment about what this class is about. Okay? I'll remove it later. Okay? Likewise, you can comment on specific seconds of this class. So let's go, I don't know, let's go somewhere here. And over here, can you hear? You probably can't because the speaker is lousy here. But but anyway, okay, Dror just raised two hands, okay? So we can add a comment saying Dror raised two hands. Obviously later we will delete this comment and I will explain why I'm doing this in a minute. Okay, anyway, if I go and save this page, and now reload it, then at minute 25, second 24, we've added Dror raised two hands, and if I click on this time, it will go to the place where Dror raises two hands. Now, this whole piece of software, oh, here you go. Ah, I already lowered them by the time it navigated there. Anyway, you know, let's go 10 seconds back and you'll probably see me raising my two hands, no? Again, you know what? Let's go there again, edit, and do the right thing, which is delete, and here you go. Help! Sorry, this is the... I messed up. Let's start it again. Okay. Right, so it got deleted. Okay, so why am I doing all of this? Well, from my perspective, it's because a lot of the content, especially the content that will appear later on in this class, is not documented elsewhere. So that's a good way to document it. Now, typically, videos of lectures are useless because, you know, if you've ever seen a video of a 30-hour class, it's 30 hours. How do you find something in it? Okay? So, this is why there will be comments on each specific video with the general content, and also, within each video, you can make further comments. So, you know, about specific parts of the video, okay? And the comments can be hyperlinked and all that, okay? And from your perspective, what is it good for? Well, let me just, you know what, let me just shut it down. Okay, so from your perspective, what is it good for? Well, it helps you get credit for this class, okay? So my aim is to have an index where for every 2-3 minutes of class time, there is one sentence saying what happens in that 2-3 minutes. You know, we talked about zero and one smoothings, we talked about the Rademeister theorem, we talked about the Jones polynomial. From my perspective, if you add these comments, you've done good deeds, and you'll get credit for the good deeds. Okay? Now let's move on about the technicalities for the class. So, so to add comments, well, to read the class, you don't need an account of any kind of any sort. To add comments, you need to have an account on my wiki. to get an account on my wiki, you just have to send me an email with your preferred username, with your real name, and with your email address, if it's different from the email you just used to send me. Okay, and I'll send you an account right away. You don't have to be in this room, so if you're watching this video right now, and you happen to be in Brazil, we can do it just as well. I don't care about your identity. I just, you know, it's not restricted to U of T students. I just want to prevent scam. That's the only reason I want registration. Okay? Now, the wiki is a part of my academic webpage. Everything you do has to be math related, you know, somehow related to the webpage, particularly to this class. Criticism is fine, no foul language, please. I allow myself to do to have editorial control. The title of all pages related to this class should start with the string AKT-09, simply so that I'm able to distinguish those from stuff that belongs to other classes. Okay? Okay, now for grading. So the final grade will be 50-50 average of your homework grade and the final exam grade. There will be a final exam at the end. If you want to see the nature of the final exam, it will probably be not very different from the, or in spirit not very different, even if in content it will be, from the exam I gave 3 years ago when I gave a similar class. So just go to the website from 3 years ago and take a look. There will be 4 or 5 homework assignments. And furthermore, you can earn up to 60 good deed points. And I already told you how. Okay? So one way is by annotating the videos. But you can also alternatively solve an open problem, give a class on one subject or another. So, you know, if somebody wants to give the Reidemeister class, I will probably encourage this. Okay, the class about the proof of the Reidemeister theorem. Drawing a big, beautiful picture, you'll see a few beautiful pictures in a minute. Taking class notes and scanning them and posting them on the website, or alternatively typing up class notes to go alongside with the videos, alternatively formatting somebody else's notes. Well, you can read it yourself. Finally, around the third week of classes, I will take a class photo. The reason I'm waiting is because classes normally change in the first few weeks. Okay, people drop in, come, drop out, come in. Okay? Questions or comments? Okay. Now for the ideology of this class. So again, so far I've done so I gave a few examples. But this was really just to sort of get us to speed on what knot theory looks like. And I told you a lot about administrative nonsense, but now I want to tell you about the actual content of this class. So the three abstracts that appear in the handout. So here is one kind of common thread that connects the two abstracts that appear more or less disjoint at first sight. And the common thread is that we want to view knot theory as an algebraic structure. So, view knot theory as an algebraic structure. So, let me explain. So, you know, if you look at this picture, for example, okay, sorry about the lousy exposure. But if you look at this picture, so it's a lovely picture of knot theory. It's knots looking like candies, okay? But the knots are completely isolated from each other, okay? Here's one, here's two, here's three, here's four. In fact, these are links, not knots, because each one of them has two or three components, okay? But still, the knots are completely, or the links are completely isolated from each other. There are no operations that connect them. And that's sort of an insufficient view of knot theory, okay? So the idea is to study different classes of knots. So maybe these will be parts of knots. So only half a knot at a time. Okay, or maybe it will be knotted graphs rather than simply knotted circles. Okay, but the idea will be to study different classes of knots that will contain these knots as examples, but on which there will be operations. Okay, on which there will be meaningful operations of composing two knots or connecting two knots, or, well, other operations, okay? So this is this. Now, why? Okay, so what is it good for? What will it give us? Well, it will give us two things. First of all, there are many questions about knot theory. You know what? Sir, speaking of mathematical maturity, let me give you an example from the topology class. Again, you don't have to understand it. If you haven't seen the topology class, just tune out for 30 seconds. Okay? So, homology is an invariant of spaces. Okay? But this is kind of a naive way of viewing homology. Even more so, homology is an invariant of spaces that has good properties, well, that of the kind that if two spaces are related to each other, their homologies are somehow related. So not only homology will map a space X to its homology and a space Y to its homology, but furthermore, if you have a map from F to Y, there will be a map for between the corresponding homologies. Okay, and furthermore, that's the key point in algebraic topology. If you want to prove the Brouwer fixed point theorem, the key point is to somehow look at you know, the sphere which is included into the ball and which may or may not have a retract into the sphere, so that this is the identity. So you have you're asking yourself if there is a certain commutative diagram of spaces, and you answer this by applying algebraic topology or by applying the homology functor and asking yourself the same question about topological spaces. Sorry, about algebras, about groups. Okay, so you end up asking yourself, can you make this diagram commutative? And, well, you know, this is not my story. Okay? So I want similar things for knot theory. I want to be able to answer questions about knots and about how knots relate to each other by having something more sophisticated than just an invariant for each knot, but an invar- but instead to have an invariant that is well behaved under operations between the knots. Okay? So this is one reason. So be able to answer more sophisticated questions, and I'll give you a few examples of such questions and how and what kind of algebraic structure you need in order to discuss these questions a little later. Okay, so this is still philosophical. And two, well, as I said before, you know, this is a picture in which you have lots and lots and lots of isolated things. If I was able to put a structure, if I was able to have operations going between these things, potentially I would find that knot theory might be, or is, if you use the right algebraic structure, finitely generated. So again, here is a point of mathematical maturity. Do you know what a finitely generated group is? Okay, so finitely generated would just mean that the whole knot theory, or maybe extended knot theory, so as to include knotted graphs and maybe to include several other things, I don't know, okay, is equal to the thing generated by a few simple generators, I don't know, generator 1, generator 2, generator 3, modulo a few simple relations, relation 1, relation 2, relation 3. This may or may not have anything to do with the randomized relations that I stated before. It's a coincidence that I use the same R. Okay? So let's add relation 4, just to make it distinct. Okay? Now, what's good about this? So, if I want an invariant of knots, such as the ones that we've discussed, it's enough to compute the, or to guess the, well, it's enough to figure, to find an appropriate target space. So first of all, you find a good target space. And then you just have to define the invariant on the generators so that the equations are satisfied. Okay? So, solve the images of equations R1 up to R4. If you do that, first of all, you'll have a homomorphism from knot theory into, well, good I suppose would also mean simpler. So into a simpler target space. So much like homology, you will be able to use it to study various properties of knots. And the second piece is completely independent of the first, and is interesting, and is surprising and interesting on its own. The second observation is that these equations that I want you to solve end up being significant equations from other places of mathematics. Okay? So, over the course, we're going to study several classes of null. We're going to go through this procedure several times for several classes of knots. And for one class of knots, the corresponding high algebra, so the corresponding good target space inside of which you want to solve interesting equations, so for one class of knots, it will be the theory of Drinfeld associators, and this will force us to discuss a little bit about what these are. Okay? In some other class of knots, it will be related to the so-called Kashiwara-Wern conjecture, which has to do with Lie groups and Lie algebras and convolutions on Lie groups and Lie algebras. And you wouldn't think it's related to knot theory, but it's exactly the question of compute of finding a knot invariant for a certain class of knots. And the part that I really, really, really want to talk about and is the most speculative, so you know, if we get to that part, you will be the most lost, because I will be the most lost, is sort of the part about this class of knots, so-called V-knots or virtual knots or knots on surfaces, whose high algebra theory is related to the Ettinghoff-Kasdan quantization of Lie algebras and quantum groups, and all of this will have to come later. Okay? And one more thing that I have to say, sort of for completeness, or not for completeness, something extremely substantial, okay? So, how do you find these good target spaces, okay, inside which you want to solve these equations? So it turns out that there is no guesswork at all. It's always the same thing, okay? And the point is that whenever you have an algebraic structure, it makes sense to study polynomials on this algebraic structure, okay? And how this comes about we will discuss later. So if your algebraic structure is Rn, polynomials on Rn will be what you think of as polynomials on Rn. If your algebraic structure is a free group or a group, then there is a meaningful notion of a polynomial on a group, and you could study those. And you know, Karine spends a lot of time studying, in some sense, polynomials on certain Bray groups. Okay. If you talk about the kind of algebraic structure that knots will make, there is also a notion of polynomials. And the invariants that we will study will be all those polynomials. Okay? So the second important thing is that we'll study polynomials on the space of knots. Okay? And the way it will work is as follows. We will find that every polynomial on the space of knots factors through a certain space. So if you have a polynomial, let's call it P, on the space of knots with values in the reals, because I don't want to have any imagination, then every polynomial on the space of knots with values in the reals factors through a certain space A. And in fact, this space A is defined by this property, that every polynomial factors through it. So it's somehow canonically associated with the space of knots, and then it will be our target space. So we will be looking for invariants of the kind Z goes from K to A, respecting all algebraic structure that exists here and here. Okay? So A is canonically associated with K. The question of finding Z is canonical. And you ask it, and when you ask it for different classes of knots, the usual knots, the virtual knots, and the W knots, you get various deep algebraic questions related to it, and it may or may not help you to answer non-theoretic questions. Okay? I'm out of time. If I had a few more minutes, and I will have them next time, I would have told you about a few of the more sophisticated questions that I want to answer. So some have to do with the ciphered algorithm, and here is a nice picture of the ciphered algorithm drawn by Emily Redlmeyer, who took a knot theory class with me a few years ago, and at the time I didn't give good deed credits, but that's the kind of things that you could get a good deed credit for. So drawing a nice picture explaining what a ciphered surface of a knot is and how to get it. This one is done already, I'm sorry. And here is another one, so another sophisticated property. So knots may or may not be fibered, and you may or may not be able to say something about fibered knots using these techniques. But this is just a nice picture, again done by a student, Robert Barrington Lee, of what a fibered knot is. So it's a knot that has a nice movie of ciphered surfaces. I suppose I will have to explain what that is next time. But here is the knot. The knot is in white, and the surface is in blue and green. And I'll stop here. Questions, comments? Okay.